Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
I'm Allison Kane, and welcome to In the Sauce, a podcast about building consumer brands from the ground up. I love doing this show because I get to interview everyone from production gurus to marketing and social media mavens, anyone who can guide me on this crazy journey. This is the story of building Haven's Kitchen sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand because we're all in the sauce.
Today, I'm speaking with Vanessa McPhill, a freelance marketer specializing in brand management and Amazon strategy with a passion for growing purpose-driven brands. With a diverse background from CPG to beauty to health and wellness, Vanessa is an Amazon Ads manager partner who works with brands like us to craft online and offline strategies to drive awareness and growth. Vanessa, I'm so happy you're here. I literally can't wait to talk about Amazon.
I'm so excited to be here too.
Okay, so I have been wanting to have this discussion for a while. I did have an Amazon guest on, Chris Moe. He was wonderful like 2 or 3 years ago, but I had absolutely no idea what questions to even ask. So now I feel like I'm learning in real time. And I think my favorite episodes are the ones where the business is kind of figuring stuff out and I get to invite the people that are helping us figure it out and ask all of my like kind of ding-dongy questions. So let's go back to sort of, I guess your background, how you got to be an Amazon person, and what exactly you do with brands that's different from maybe what another, you know, search agency or something like that might do with brands.
Absolutely. So I started my career in specifically media management in the agency world in New York City. And, you know, this was quite a long time ago. And honestly, Amazon was not necessarily on the radar at that point. And after a few years, you know, we started to see more brands starting to do little things on Amazon, search being the obvious one, right? If there's a consumer on Amazon searching, you want to put an ad in front of it. And so, you know, within the media world, I started getting involved with that with different brands. And as Amazon grew, like I know you said you had a guest from 2 years ago or 2 or 3 years ago, and I was just thinking how different Amazon the business is. You know, even 2 or 3 months ago, it moves so quickly. It's such a big beast in the space. So, you know, I've been lucky enough to work with brands who are really willing to try something new, and especially on Amazon, they go out and they test and they see things and then see results. And so, you know, besides, you know, just search, Amazon has a lot to offer, especially when it comes to building that top of the funnel awareness. And, you know, they've acquired a lot of properties, whether that be Twitch or Freevee, things like that, where there's just so much to be able to test. So I've just always found it to be a lot of fun to work on Amazon. You know, I think a lot of people think of them as just a retail partner, or others think of them as just a media partner, but they're really all of the above. And so it's a great way to hit a consumer from an awareness perspective all the way down to driving a sale. So there's all kinds of things that you can do on Amazon. I think for me, my approach to Amazon is a lot less focused on performance and just driving sales, and really focused on what can Amazon do to help you build a brand across the board, right?
Right.
When you think about it, a consumer is going to Amazon, and first of all, anybody, any Joe Schmo can go and sell something on Amazon, right? So there's...
Right. It's a third-party marketplace. I learned that today.
Look at you. See? My first solo thing that I did with Amazon. It was, gosh, it must have been like 4 years ago. My best friend and I were like, you know what? Time to make some money. And we figured out how to sell pool floats. They were like these little cute champagne pool floats. We're from Florida, so we're pool girls. Mm-hmm. And we decided we were going to sell pool floats. And so we bought a bunch of pool floats from Alibaba at the time, and we were selling them there. And I started to realize, you know, there's a lot that brands can do to become more credible in the space because Amazon has the tools out there for you, right? So to me, it's not just getting out there and paying for search. Like, that's obviously an incredibly important part, but it's thinking about all of these other things, whether it be paid media type things or whether it be having a really strong brand store or things that are free that Amazon has to offer to make that store and make that presence on Amazon a lot more credible.
Okay. So this is awesome because, you know, I know enough to know that being able to be on Amazon, I mean, people who listen to this podcast know, you know, we mm-hmm. are not building out our own D2C store. We mm-hmm. are doing a buy with Prime partially because of the economics, but also yep. because we know that, you know, it's what the number two or number three search engine in the world. And just having a presence on Amazon is, to your point, really helpful for just brand awareness. People, when they type in Haven's Kitchen into Amazon, if nothing shows up or something kind of like lame shows up because it's this like old pouch of, you know, a fresh sauce from a few years ago that was on Whole Foods, right. you know, it's not a great look for the brand. So
right.
that this feels good because it's like we're thinking about it kind of right.
Yes, you're going in the right direction. You know, one thing that I've noticed over the last few years is that consumers in brick and mortar, in stores, they still go to Amazon before they make the purchase a lot of the time. So exactly what you're saying, Allie, you want to make sure that when a consumer goes to look you up to see how your reviews are doing, to see what the brand is, that you have a presence there and they can make a confident purchase in the store.
Okay. And so that's an amazing way to think about Amazon because, you know, part of the thing is, and I like the way that you divide it into, you know, you think about your sales on Amazon, which is mm-hmm. obviously, you know, what are you bidding on? What are you offering? What is the price per ounce? Or, you know, I mean, we sort of positioned ourselves as like, we do want to be profitable there, where I know some yep. brands aren't planning on that, but they're thinking of it as like an add to cart kind of awareness play. We are not. Mm-hmm. And then the other side of it is where you really like to focus, which is the brand story. Both on the platform and off that, you know, use Amazon to build the brand presence and brand awareness.
Yes, absolutely. And what's great, it doesn't have to be expensive.
Right. So that's what I want to get really into because this is what's so great. So the first thing you said when you were talking about building that brand story is the store, having a brand store. So explain a little bit what that means in terms of, you know, right now we have a multi-pack and, you know, a four-pack of each of the individual flavors. And I know that we're working on the store page and there's going to be video and there's going to be click-through things. And it's almost like your own little website on Amazon. But tell me a little bit more about it and what makes a good one? How, and it isn't expensive if you can, you know, make pretty things inexpensively. So tell exactly. me a little bit about it. What makes a good one? You know, all of the templates, et cetera.
Absolutely. So I think the thing that you need to know about a brand store is that you got to think about it as like a consumer going into a brick and mortar store. You want to make sure that they're able to build their basket with all of your products. It's like having your own little retail shop right on Amazon, right? And so what's great is that with Amazon, you're able to really optimize and see what's working for consumers. So if you know that vegan or organic are things that are going to set your brand apart from others, put that right in the brand story. You can tell a story there. Like you said, you're having video. That's fantastic. That really can be very sticky. And give consumers an option to look through the other things that you have available. Obviously, you want to start with your product detail pages. So with each individual ASIN, making sure that you have really strong above the fold images or video, that you have the most important points up there in those ATFs, but also across all of your A plus page content as well.
What's an ATF?
ATF is above the fold. So basically it's when you go to a product page and you can click through all those images, and sometimes it'll be videos and sometimes it'll be comparison right. charts. So it'll just be like a little check. We have this, we have this, we have this. Those things there are the first thing that people can scroll through and say, yes, I want this, or no, I don't.
Got it. Okay. Okay. And so the strong ATFs, you want that, like on a website, to be really strong content.
Exactly.
And if it's really good, there's like direct correlation to good sales and also good storytelling, right?
Yes, absolutely. I know I looked not too long ago and Amazon quoted, you can see an increase of sales of about 20% if your ATFs are strong. So you want to make sure that you're really capitalizing on that. It also will help the content quality score of your entire page so that you're showing up better in search results, whether that be in paid or organic. So when people search for you, Amazon will see a product detail page listing with quality ATFs, with a quality A-plus page, which basically is just all the content beyond that. And they'll rank that a little higher, similar to what Google does, right? So that combination of a strong PDP, product detail page.
So going back to those, you know, the strong above the fold, getting a high quality content score or content quality score, that's good for us to know, because I think a lot of times we feel as emerging brands, like, it's too expensive to invest in like the real photography, you know, all of that, the sort of real graphics. But this is a case for making sure that when you are doing your photo shoots and when you're designing things, that you're designing them, if you are going to be on Amazon, with Amazon specs in mind. So
absolutely
horizontal, I'm assuming, and, mm-hmm. you know, video, I would imagine, is probably more compelling than just some good photos.
Video is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
And then still above the fold, you want to make sure that you're, and you said that you can tell what's important, you know, whether it's vegan or gluten-free, et cetera. How can you tell? How do you know?
Yeah. So there's many, many ways to do testing in Amazon. I think the first one that I recommend is setting up A-B tests within your A-plus content. So like I said, the A-plus content essentially is everything that is basically below the fold, right? So everything, when you scroll through the product detail page and you start to see really long listings, and they'll have, you know, a description of maybe a story of where the product was sourced. And then they'll have, you know, how the ingredients came together and things like that. Why do we do it that way? It tells your brand story and your product story. You'll start to see, if you do some A-B testing, where you're getting more sales, where you're getting more detail page views, more stickiness. When you start to see those things pop those up into your ATFs.
Got it. And you're doing this for us?
You're
or are we supposed to be doing this?
I know that you guys are doing this.
Okay. Okay, good. Because I'm like, yes. Is someone doing this? I don't
yes.
know. Okay. All right. This is a good time. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and keep talking about all things Amazon, because it's super fun. We'll be right back.
This episode is supported by HRN business member Anton's, a cozy, nostalgic New York cafe and wine bar in the heart of the West Village. Anton's thoughtfully reimagines New York City's rich culinary history through comforting, eclectic American cuisine with deep European influences and a wine list 550 plus bottles deep, all within a warm and inviting space. Anton's supports HRN's creative educational reporting and storytelling that drives conversation to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place.
I'm back with Vanessa McPhill, and we are talking about A-plus content on Amazon, which you can imagine I thought meant great content. Like, I was like, what's B-plus content? What's C-plus content? And Ashley was like, no, it's not. It doesn't mean like, yay, good content. So the first thing, and why couldn't we set up, or was it just our timing because we had to rush to put the things up because of the Nexty Award? Why are we waiting? Why did we wait to make a a store or like a brand page after we did the product pages. Was that just us?
No, I don't think that's just you. I think it's important to have your product pages up first, right? Because that's the ace, and that's where the sale is. So you want to get that correct. And then the brand page is really to pull everything together. So
okay,
while it is a brand story, at the end of the day, yes, Amazon is a sales driver. You want to have your PDPs strong and put in a really good place so that when you put it together in a brand store, the entire umbrella, if you will, makes sense together.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. Okay. And so what are the other sort of best practices? I know like a good video, you want to have, you know, a little bit of testing in terms of like what's really resonating with consumers. Are there any, where just best practices where you're like, ugh, I wish every brand had this, you know, type of content. Yeah.
Absolutely. I would say, I mean, it's going to depend on your category, right? But I think the important thing here is to make sure that you're very honest with what your product is and what it isn't within your detail pages so that you're avoiding any kind of negative reviews because someone didn't understand. So for example, if someone is thinking of an aioli and they go by Haven's Kitchen and they want something that's more of a mayo-based product, they need to be clear, and the brand pages need to be clear that that's not what this is. This is a vegan product. It's made with aquafaba. Like you want to make sure that the consumer understands that up front so that they're not going back and tanking your reviews because maybe they didn't understand what a brand might think is obvious. So that's the first thing. I think that's a trap that a lot of people fall into. You know, when you love your brand and you know your brand, don't assume that your consumers do.
Right.
Put that in there.
Yep.
I think obviously being very visual in your text, in your language, and putting the time into design, like bullets are great, but if there's ways that you can put in comparison charts, whether it's comparisons to your other products, comparisons to the market, comparisons to competitors, including that in there as well, ingredients, sizing, that type of thing. Certifications, if you have that, those are great.
Right. So our like spice meter is a good example. Like
perfect example.
We have like an image that has like, it's not spicy at all in the yuzu, but it gets up to kind of like heat on the, and is there like a number of those like that where you just kind of jump the shark where like there are too many, you know, like is there, you want like three good images or charts, or do you want like,
that's a good question. I think in your ATFs, you want to have around 5 to 7. In your A plus, okay. It's going to depend on the category. It's going to depend on the product. But you'll see very quickly if you're getting a little too far. You'll see traffic drop off pretty fast.
And I also remember Ashley explaining that the order of on your PDPs, it's always like front of pouch, back of pouch, lifestyle shot, ingredient shot. Like it's all, it's pretty,
standardized.
Standardized.
Yeah. You want to stay with what consumers already know. Like almost think about it as the way they shop in store, right? They're going to look at the front of the pack first. They'll turn it around and start looking at the ingredients, maybe a nutrition panel. And then you start to put in your lifestyle and your video images towards the end there.
Amazing. And I think, you know, the part that you just mentioned about making sure that you're honest, it's not as if, I mean, I'm just thinking that's such a good point that it's not like we wouldn't be honest with our consumer. It's that we would assume that it is obvious to them that this isn't going to be mayonnaise because it is plant-based aioli. But you're saying really make very, very clear every single thing that could be a question because they might not get it. They're buying it and then the reviews can kill you. So
exactly. You can assume some Amazon consumers, I'm not going to lie to you. I sometimes am one of them. Some consumers are just like super shoppers and they're like, this is pretty, add to cart. I think it's one thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to read it. And then, you know, they'll go back and be like, oh, I didn't even realize that this is not a mayo based product. And that saves you from a negative review that you didn't deserve.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk about reviews a little bit.
Sure.
I know that they're important. I know that you're not supposed to, you know, flood you're not supposed to like be up there and get 100 5-star reviews immediately.
Right.
That's like a big red flag. What are sort of the rules and the goals around reviews? And what do you do if they start getting weird because, you know, it's getting delivered a certain way or, you know, things kind of beyond your control? Help Absolutely. Me figure that out. Okay.
Yes. So like you said, with Amazon reviews, they are very, very strict about any kind of ingenuine review, right? So you want to make sure that you're not asking people to give reviews, that you're not incentivizing them to give reviews. You can join some of Amazon programs like Avine, where you'll send out the product usually ahead of a launch. They'll send it out to a certain amount of consumers, and then those consumers will come back and write a review, and Amazon will tag the review as like they were giving as an incentivized review. That's totally fair. But really what Amazon wants to see is a consistent trickling in of a consistent level of reviews. Right. So if you're getting 1 to 2 reviews a day over the time of 6 months, that is going to be way better for you than if you get 30 reviews in a week, because Amazon's going to flag that. When it comes to negative reviews coming in, when you start to see something negative, I always recommend that brands have someone whose job, maybe not their only job, but their job is to look at reviews and to respond to them. I think it's important, just like on any other site, to respond to those reviews to make it right. And then if it's something that's out of your control, like for example, you know, summer shipping can be kind of an issue sometimes on Amazon, where there's so many warehouses and so many distribution centers where sometimes certain products don't do well in the summer. They might come back melted, or they come back and the consistency is weird, where you can talk to your Amazon retail reps and figure out if you even want to ship during that time. So Amazon is very good at, you know, it's their reputation too. So they're very good at working with brands to make sure that if there is something that is outside of the brand's control that is reducing the quality of the product for a consumer, how can we fix that? And if you don't fix it, to be honest, Amazon's going to come and pull down your page anyway. So they're right. obviously wanting that to be good.
Well, I feel like a lot of that is also, I mean, going back to this like idea of the third party, you know, marketplace. So I think this is obvious. And yet for some reason today it hit me like a ton of bricks, you know, because I have friends who are, you know, I guess there are people buying their products just like you bought the pool float, but these are like small sort of baby brands. Maybe they had a rotation at Costco that didn't do tremendously well, so people bought it, or Costco sold it, or you know, people are just buying it at places and then like reselling it. And that is allowed. I mean, Nike doesn't sell on Amazon because they don't like not being in control of selling Absolutely. Their products. So with that being allowed and the quality of that experience can be bad, is there anything brands can do, or is there anything Amazon is thinking about doing? Like Amazon's got to know that that's an issue, or is it not an issue for them because that's how they're built?
That is a great question. I don't know that I can speak to if Amazon thinks it's an issue or not. I can say that what I would recommend brands do is to, again, like you have someone who's dedicated to looking at reviews, having someone that's looking out for other third parties that are selling your product, right? So I know there are brands, and you know, this might be easier for a bigger brand, but there are brands that will send a cease and desist, right? Like, you're not able to send my product out, or you can work with other parties to try to make it a little bit more credible. So, or sign a contract with whoever seller to become an authorized seller on Amazon of my product. So I think it's a matter of each brand. I almost want to use an example of like protecting your trademark, protect your brand on Amazon. If you see another seller selling your brand, reach out to them and try to get that, either get them to agree to your terms and maybe come to some kind of terms and conditions, or try to get them to stop, because it, like you said, that can significantly reduce your quality. And I know there are a lot of brands, I should say, who are selling first party on Amazon, so they have a little bit more control of quality, not price, which is a, you know, negative of going first party, but with third party, I think it's even more important to be out there and looking online and making sure that there's not someone else selling your products and either misrepresenting your brand or selling counterfeit or selling, you know, expired or poor quality products that would look bad on your brand.
And the other thing that I noticed that we didn't start with, but then kind of woke up to was subscription. Again, from my understanding, Amazon just decides that you're eligible for it or something at some point. I don't know. You will help me figure that out. But can you, I've also kind of heard murmurings. People are like, you know, there's always this idea with subscription that it's great for brands, whether D2C or on Amazon, because people subscribe and then forget. And it's just this, I don't know, weird incoming thing. I also, obviously, it makes, you know, that sort of cost per acquisition much lower, you know, if someone's Absolutely. Buying multiple on a regular basis. I guess thoughts around how subscription works on Amazon, how the save part works, because I'm imagining the brands are funding the save mm-hmm. part. And then also, is there a way to maximize the subscription piece or, you know, I guess incentivize if it is a really good thing, is there a way to sort of incentivize people to do it beyond a discount?
Absolutely. So I think Subscribe and Save is one of those things that can go gangbusters for a brand. That is going to be your Amazon brand loyalist. I know brands that have really strong Subscribe and Save, and it literally is a set it and forget it type situation. And what I love about Subscribe and Save is that the discount does not need to be that low. You know, it can be, it's amazing, especially with an Amazon consumer. If you really pay attention to the little coupon that you're clipping, sometimes it's not that high. It can be a couple of cents. But yeah, so, you know, consumers, they want things to be easy, especially for something that they know they're going to just keep using. Right. So they're obviously, you know, if it's a TV, I'm not going to subscribe and save to a TV. But for something like an aioli that I'm using, that I'm consistently cooking with, why not put it in Subscribe and Save? When it comes to maximizing Subscribe and Save, I think the best way to do it is really to advertise it. There's many, many ways you could do it. You could do it through social and driving people to your site. But I think that's where DSP, which is Amazon's demand side platform, comes in. And you really can just put out an ad. You don't even have to make super fancy creative. You can do what they call responsive e-commerce creative. So Amazon built it for you. It pulls the image and it pulls things out of your product detail page. So you can just set it live and it'll tell the consumer, if you subscribe to this, you can save whatever the percent is, whatever the dollar is based on the percent. Push that out to consumers who visit your detail page frequently, who have purchased from you in the last 30 to 90 days. Consumers that you know are more likely to be loyalist. I wouldn't lead Subscribe and Save with, you know, in an awareness tactic. I don't know that that's the right place to start, because you want to make sure that this person is loves your brand and will buy it regardless versus buy on Subscribe and Save and then unsubscribe a month later. So I would add that as another lever to reach those consumers who are more loyal to your brand.
So that's awesome. Let's talk about the DSP. So
yeah,
DSP stands for?
It stands for demand side platform. essentially.
Okay. Demand side platform. And that's what your like sweet spot is, I think.
Yes. That basically is just paid ads. And Amazon, you know, like I said, Amazon is a retailer, but Amazon is also a media partner, and Amazon is a major, massive data house. And so demand-side platform basically means that you can go out and use Amazon's data to find specific types of consumers to drive them to your Amazon page, and even, frankly, outside, so if you have a DTC page that you want to drive consumers to. Because Amazon has so many data points from just a person shopping, they have that. They can know that I am a 35-year-old woman who's a mom who loves Michael Jackson and does karaoke.
and listens to this podcast. I actually saw it. I saw on our Amazon page, people who buy, now I didn't see you. I mean, it might've been you, but people, yeah, it was like people who buy your product also listen to, like, you know, I don't know, something on NPR and some other podcast about, you know, murder.
Yeah. Cause they own, think about it. They own Wondery, which is a podcast network. They own, they have Amazon Prime, which is all video. They have IMDb, which is the movie network. They own, I can go on and on and on with what they own. You know, they own Twitch, which is huge, right? So they have all of this data and they do all the things that are, make it legal to have all the data together. And so they can really target in, and they own Whole Foods, which is huge. All of that data together, you can go in and find a very specific consumer that you want to put your ad in front of and follow them through the funnel.
Okay. And so when you do that ad, how much of it is, you know, you flip on this responsive e-com switch and Amazon just does it for you? How much of it needs to be creative? How much of it do we need to be thinking about? What are we, Haven's Kitchen, thinking about right now? I know there's like a pool analogy where there's like swimming in the pool and then there's like getting closer to the steps and then there's like diving.
Sure.
So tell me all about that. And you can be specific with us in terms of, I mean, the people who are listening, I think, no, I'm pretty open about everything. So share any strategy that might be helpful.
Absolutely. So using us as an example, what we're using DSP, demand side platform, for is to really fill the top of the funnel. So we already have search going. We know that that's going to work. We know that there are consumers looking for specific products, looking for Haven's Kitchen even. That's already happening. What we want to do is get more consumers into the funnel. And so the way that I kind of speak about this is, you want to teach Amazon's algorithm that Haven's Kitchen is a brand on Amazon that we want to give impressions to, but you also want to teach Amazon consumers to search and buy your brand, right? So that's what DSP is going to do. It's going to go out there. And so if we're going into the pool analogy and we're using Aioli as an example. So right before Haven's was on Amazon, there are absolutely people who are looking, if Haven's Kitchen is a pool, there are people who are out there that are like, swimming is cool. I like swimming. I'm not going to the pool today, but swimming is cool. I would consider that our awareness bucket, right? And they're like, they know about swimming. Swimming is interesting, but they're not looking for a pool. They're not putting a bathing suit on today. They have no interest in doing it, but you put your brand in front of them because it's like, if you ever decide to go swimming, just know, swim at Haven's Kitchen, right? If you go a little bit further down the funnel, maybe you're at the pool now. I'm not going in the water, but I'm here and it's lovely, right? We consider those like consideration people. So those are people who maybe they're not looking to purchase an Aioli today, but maybe they're looking for dinner ideas. Maybe they're looking for sauces. Maybe they've purchased something to buy for, maybe they've even bought HelloFresh. That's consideration. Like, they're in the market, they're by the pool, but I'm not going in. I have a bathing suit on, but I have no intention of getting wet. My hair looks good. I'm not doing it. You know what I mean? That's that next funnel. So we're putting Haven's in front of that. And then the third is really, this is where we get into like remarketing and targeting specifically. These people are in the pool. We just want to make sure it's our pool. They're making sure, they're like, I got my goggles on. I got my bathing suit, my towel. I put on my sunscreen. I'm jumping in. Jump in my pool. So that's a little further down the funnel.
Okay. And then this DSP stuff, are there ads that are sort of like, for the people thinking about going swimming eventually, for the people who are like by the pool and like maybe thinking about other pools, and then, you know, yeah. And so, and are you, are we, whoever, is it manually saying, okay, we want to put, you know, this is our total budget and 30% of it goes to this, 30% of it goes to that. Like, how does it actually?
Yes. Yes. I would look at it that way. So it would also depend on how far along in your journey you are within Amazon, right? So if you do have strong brand awareness and strong brand awareness on Amazon, maybe you don't need to look at people who aren't going to the pool, right? Maybe you can already focus on the people who are in the pool and the people who are around the pool. But if you're a brand new brand to Amazon, you want to, like I said, teach people that you exist. So I would put a significant portion, we're doing, I would say about 40% of the budget, to just awareness. And that's just like, hey, Haven's Kitchen's available on Amazon. It's not, again, it's not looking at driving sales, right? It's not going to be a sales converter. I wouldn't look at DSP as something to look at your return on ad spend. It's a long-term investment. But you want to look at that and just like, you can do, like we said, the responsive e-commerce ads, which is what we're doing initially to just get people used to your brand being on Amazon. But there is a whole gamut of ads that you can do on Amazon through DSP. You can do video, you can do very custom images and things like that. Obviously, it can get more expensive when you start to do that, but you can start small right. and start to build up. When okay. you're getting down to retargeting, that's when you're going to want to, or the people in the pool, I would say, that's when you're going to mm-hmm. want to look at things like even a subscribe and save ad. Like, hey, I'm going to target this to somebody who's been to my pool before, give them a subscribe and save ad so they get a membership to my pool.
Right. We could just keep going with the pool. With the pool thing.
I'm a Florida girl, like I said, so.
Yeah.
I could go
well,
on
it's funny because, you know, I had a whole discussion with my 21-year-old daughter. This is not related to Amazon, but it's funny because she said something like, I don't want you to be holding my like float in the pool anymore, but I want to know that like you're still in the pool if I'm swimming to the deep end. And I was like, now I'm always like, I do a little swimmer emoji or I do a little splash, you know, like just to remind her that like, she's growing up, she's swimming, but I'm also in the pool.
But you're still
I'm still in the pool. So it's funny because we literally just had this conversation over the weekend. And
I love that. I'm going to tell my son this. That's so great.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of true. You start off like with, you are the water wings and then you're kind of like, you know, it's like the bike analogy, but the pool is kind of more fun because you're in the pool together.
I like that.
Okay. Sorry for the aside. Okay. And so again, is there a difference between your, this sort of discoverability DSP, versus like when you bid on other Mayo's or Aioli's for search? Like,
yes.
Okay. Can you break that down a little bit?
Absolutely. So search essentially is going to show up on the listing page or on the Amazon page. So if you go to amazon.com and you search for Aioli, and you'll see some, maybe 4 to 5, depending on the day, maybe 2 or 3, that'll say sponsored at the top. And I will say Amazon search has become very, very sophisticated. You could do video now, you could have your brand store show up. Like, it actually is very beautiful what you can do in search versus even a few years ago, even a few months ago, to be honest. But Amazon search essentially is a consumer goes in, they search for something, and whether it be Aioli or whether it be dinner ideas or whether it be, I don't know, spatula, you could, if you wanted to, bid on that keyword, right? And so Amazon will show things based on what they think is most appropriate. If a person clicks on it, you pay for the click, they go to your detail page. That's search. DSP is a little different where it's less based on, it's not based on a consumer making a search. It's based on all of the behaviors a consumer has done over the, over an, whatever specified time period, whether it be 30 days, 90 days, et cetera. So I don't have to go on Amazon.com today and search for Aioli to be served a DSP ad. I could simply have gone to Whole Foods maybe a week ago and purchased, let's say, sriracha mayo, and I could fall into a bucket that says they might be a good target, right? And so we, Haven's Kitchen, can push out an ad to me because of something I did a week ago, even though I didn't go search for Aioli's today. So that is the key difference between the two.
Ah, got it. It really, it's like, mm-hmm. it's like a media world. It's a totally different, it's not, it's kind of cool that it's both. You know, I mean, I love the way that you framed it up at the beginning. Like, it is two channels fully.
Yeah.
It is a marketing channel and a sales channel. And
absolutely,
I think that's probably why brands are willing not to make the margin. But it seems to me, I mean, unless we've calculated everything totally backward, which, you know, I hope we haven't. It seems to me like there is a way to make a lot of profitable money on Amazon if you do it right. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I would also encourage brands to not just look at the impact of Amazon within just Amazon.com sales, but look at the impact of Amazon on your brick and mortar sales as well.
Because right. Yeah.
Consumers don't shop in a vacuum. They're not like, I only purchase on Amazon, and therefore I saw this Amazon ad and I'm going to buy it on Amazon. They might see an Amazon search ad and maybe they don't convert, but they'll go right into Whole Foods or go right into Sprouts and buy it in there.
Yep. Yep. I mean, it is the true sort of omni-channel, you know, I think we're all aware that people discover digitally and, you know, for the most part are still sort of buying, you know, physically, although that changes and that's obviously super category dependent. Okay. So we talked about discoverability. We talked about sort of how to make yourself look good, both when people come to you, when people don't come to you. Can we talk a little bit about Prime Day? It's not a TV, you know, people might not necessarily be thinking like, oh, I'm going to save up to buy aioli on Prime Day. But yeah. I know that you do feel, you have good feelings about Prime Day.
I have feelings about this. I will say, yes. I am a Prime Day convert. I used to think, you know, a few years ago, it was like, if it's not a TV or a Kindle, why would I ever do anything on Prime Day? And Amazon honestly has just shown me different. I think I was listening to a different podcast not too long ago, and it made me think of this. And they said, they were talking about the Super Bowl, and they said, you know, most artists don't make any significant money from the Super Bowl. They don't do it for the money. They do it for the exposure, right? They know that if I go to the Super Bowl, searches are going to go up. If I do the Super Bowl, people are going to listen to my album more, et cetera, et cetera. That's how I think of Prime Day. Like, it's not going to be your Super Bowl, but maybe it's your halftime show. Amazon has convinced and conditioned consumers to shop on Prime Day, even if they have no intention to buy anything, even if they don't know what they want to buy, or if they have one thing they want to buy. That doom scroll is going away from TikTok and Instagram. It's going to Prime Day. It's going to Amazon. And next thing you know, you've bought light up candles, you've bought aiolis, you've bought a TV, and you've bought new doorknob handles because that, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
The consumer is conditioned now with Amazon Prime Day, and now they have Fall Prime Day as well, to just go check it out. And almost every time they end up doing something else. Will you end up having a super successful sales day? Maybe, maybe not, right? It's going to depend on what you offer. It's going to depend on how much traffic you drive to Prime Day from social, from your influencers, from other channels. But regardless of that, there's traffic there to take advantage of, right?
Right.
You might see that more people are on your detail page. Maybe not one of them purchases, but if more people are on your detail page, that means you have a bigger pool in the future to target against, to put ads against, to put subscribe and save against. Right. So I would encourage for Prime Day, for Fall Prime Day, even for like New Year, New You, things like that, all of Amazon's tentpole, just consider what your strategy is going to be to capitalize on the guaranteed extra traffic that Amazon is going to get. I think last year, or the year before, one of the top products that they had for Prime Day was a protein powder. I never would have guessed. I remember being blown away of like, protein powder? That's what people are buying for Prime? Yeah. Yeah.
So when you say make a strategy, whether or not you're planning on like, you know, having a ton of sales, I mean, to me, strategy is like, all right, well, we'll offer, you know, whatever, 10, 15, I don't know, 20% discount, whatever. That's part of the strategy. The other part of the strategy, I would imagine, is taking our sort of, you know, core email list and sending them, telling them that this is going to happen on Amazon for Prime Day. But other than those two things, that's pretty much all I got for like a make a strategy for Prime Day. So what are the other kind of components that would like make a strategy for Prime Day for a brand like ours? Yeah.
Yeah. So I would suggest looking at it in a three-pronged approach, right? So you're going to look at your lead-in. So the few days before Prime Day, no more than a week out. People don't care that far out. But a few days before Prime Day, talking to your social media audience, if you have a discount, let them know it's coming. be careful because Amazon does change its rule every year on whether or not you can say Prime Day, but consumers know. It's kind of like Super Bowl, like you can say the big day or whatever. But
wow, really?
So it does change every year, but you know, double check. We didn't get that. We haven't had the rules yet. Last year they were a lot more lenient, but the year before they were very strict about where you could and could not say Prime Day. But either way, people know it's coming, right? So letting people know discounts are coming, look out for us. Letting your social media followers know. If you have social media ads or any other kind of ads, putting that out there, I would recommend on social moves a lot faster. So no more than like 2 to 3 days out, just letting people just tease them that the product is coming, their sale is coming. And then day of, talk about it, shout about it, talk about it on social, get your influencers to talk about it, have them drive there, put in links so that they can drive directly to there. Put it in emails, reminders, things like that. Whatever you can do to drive to your sales, not only is that going to help drive your actual sale, but again, when you start driving outside traffic to Amazon, Amazon rewards your brand for that. That's what they want to see.
Okay. So, I mean, we are basically using Amazon as the, I mean, that's how we're using content creators and influencers. Like, my goal is that they're like, out there talking about it and directing people. This is what we could not do with Fresh, which is why we never really invested in this type of marketing. Because by the time someone listened to someone talking about the product, it was like a half an hour later and they couldn't find it on the thing, right? So now it's like, okay, I'm heading to Amazon. I'm going to buy it. How does Amazon reward us for that? That's very cool. What does that mean?
In your search results, it's again, feeding the algorithm, right? So if you have more traffic going to your pages, Amazon's algorithm is going to see that and you're more likely to show up organically. Showing up organically is going to be huge for Prime Day because there's already so much more extra traffic on Amazon that if you're showing up organically with that extra traffic, you didn't even pay for that person to come to your detail page or to make a sale, hopefully. I'm basically talking about in search results. There's that. And then there's also, you know, Amazon does have Prime Day pages. I will caution, it is incredibly hard to show up in a consistent place on a Prime Day page where they have like all the Prime Day listings. So I'm not trying to guarantee that you're going to be able to get on those, but it will help. The third prong of that though is after Prime Day, kind of, I call it like the lead out. After Prime Day, figuring out what you're going to do with the new consumers who came to your page. So if you had a lot of people come look at your detail pages, if you had a lot of people searching for your products, if you had a lot of people browsing, clicking, adding to cart even, those are great people to do two things with. One, create lookalike audiences with DSB. So basically saying, okay, this person obviously is interested in my product. They added this to cart, or they searched for me, or they looked at my detail page. What Amazon can tell you, like, okay, well, this person is probably interested in natural products. This person is into a healthy lifestyle, things about that person that they have through their data. And you can create what's called a lookalike audience and find other consumers who are like that. And so you can target them in more ads in the future. So there's that. Or you can straight up do retargeting and get back in front of that person. I would suggest this is a great place to use Subscribe and Save and say, all right, you added us to cart, but you didn't buy us. Here's a Subscribe and Save message. Here's a little incentive. Why don't you go ahead and purchase? They probably will.
And that's all through Amazon. That's not like us sending emails to these folks. That's like all through.
It's all through Amazon.
Right. Wow. Okay. So one of the things that I kind of want to talk about before we wind it down is the difference really between, you know, that the ROAS, basically the return on ad spend, Instacart number, which is very much sort of bottom of the funnel. We always talk about this.
Absolutely.
Like people are going there, they're buying their groceries. You know, we've kind of calculated what we need to have as a ROAS, and it's not the number exactly that Instacart gives you to make sure that like we are getting our money's worth and that the return on that investment is actually working. But Amazon, the ROAS is a little different. So when we see like a, you know, 2.8 ROAS, it's not apples to apples with the Instacart ROAS. And there's also like, ACOs and TACOs. Like, there are all these like other acronyms on Amazon. So how would you help us understand what success looks like, what it should look like? What are the things that we really should keep our eyes on?
Yes, absolutely. So I think with Amazon, again, I think you put it perfectly. Amazon and Instacart are not equal in that Instacart is a retailer and a search platform, but Amazon is a lot more than that. And so I would look at Amazon in a scorecard, right? So look at each piece that you are doing and the role that it plays and scorecard it based on that. So if your objective, you've just launched on Amazon and you want people to know who you are and your objective is awareness, you're not going to want to base that on ROAS, right? Because you're just not going to see a good ROAS. You're automatically going to want to take the money out and put it into search. I would not look at it that way. What I like to do is what I call like a weighted scorecard. So, okay, if our objective is awareness, but obviously we need to make sales, maybe 40% of our budget is going towards awareness. And I'm looking at metrics like reach. I'm looking at our detail page view rate and things like that. I'm looking at our click-through rate versus some of the bottom of the funnel consideration or purchase, where I'm looking more at like your ACOS, cost of sale, or your ROAS, or your subscribe and save rate. So to me, it's more important to look, just like if you're going to fill the funnel with these tactics, you also want to measure the funnel based on what each role is supposed to do. Because otherwise, every time, if you go in there and you say you want to have an awareness objective, but you're looking at a sales KPI, it's never going to make sense to keep spending that way. So yep. You're going to have a little bit of flexibility.
Right. And a little bit of patience, I think, is what you're saying, yes, too. Like, it's going to be a little bit more expensive. It's not going to feel as fulfilling. But absolutely, what you're saying is like you are building the top of that funnel and getting learnings from Amazon basically on who's coming into the funnel. And that way, then you can start to really drive, start to drive sales. But it's, keep it separate in your mind and don't freak out when it's not necessarily immediately, you know, of course, me being me, I'm like, why do we only have, 25 reviews? And I don't know, I think we hit like 10,000 in sales or something. I'm like, where are all the people, you know? But I think what you're saying is it's a slow build and we're starting to build that audience and build that top of the funnel. And then there's more fun to have once we have more people in there.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then, you mentioned driving people to Amazon from other channels, which is perfect for us because, I mean, there are people who have both D2C and Amazon, and I guess there are brands. And what do you say to them? Like, for us, obviously, any traffic that we have where people want to click to buy from their couch is driving them to Amazon. But what about the brands that have both?
Yeah, I think, there's advantages to both. I think the biggest advantage to driving to your own D2C is that you own the data, right? So you basically own the consumer. You do lose that when you drive to Amazon. I think to look at what the return is for D2C versus Amazon. And then also, Amazon can also drive D2C. So there might be brands who are on Amazon just to have that presence and to have the brand store and the credibility, but maybe they're using that data through DSP to drive their DTC website, right? Because Amazon's data is almost definitely, in most cases, going to be a little bit more robust than your D2C website. So it really is going to be a matter of what your objectives are, what you're trying to accomplish, but there are ways to make them work together.
Well, in our case, going back to us, because we went through the process of making it buy with Prime and it's going through Shopify, I don't know if that's the right way to say it. I believe we are getting first party data because we're just not necessarily, when people buy it on Amazon, it doesn't necessarily, we don't get that data. But if people want to come through us and they buy on our website, even though they're buying it on Amazon, we're still getting that data. Is that right? Okay.
Yes. If they buy on your website, then yes, you'll keep that data. Once they leave Amazon, leave to Amazon, you'll lose whatever happens after that. But if they purchase on your website, boom, that's your consumer. That's your data.
Right. Okay. Last question for you. I know you love Amazon and you're excited about it. What are the big watchouts for brands that you're like, okay, be very careful, don't mess this up? And what are the things that you think brands should be like ready and poised to like hop on as Amazon continues to evolve, because we know that they are ever evolving.
That's an understatement. Yes. Amazon definitely is ever evolving. I would say for things to hop on, I think I would say pay attention to what Amazon is launching and what they're kind of placing their hats on. I think one of the big ones is essentially sustainability. I know they have like Client Pledge Friendly Week coming up soon. You can see the Client Pledge Friendly logo on a lot of products there. And, you know, here's the thing. Like we said, Amazon has so much data, not only in all of the platforms that they own, but even in reviews, right? They know exactly how consumers feel about everything. So when Amazon is coming up with something and then they're doubling down on something, I think that's really important.
It's because people care.
Exactly. It's important to think about how that can affect your brand, especially when it comes to sustainability. Is one of those things that I've just noticed over the last few years, Amazon is going further and further down that path.
Okay.
I'm really interested to see what Amazon has coming out with AI. One thing I think that's really interesting is, or that I love as a consumer, is, you know, you can go in and it has AI generated reviews, which is great, right? Amazon's obviously going to do more with AI. I don't know what they're going to do, but
right. Well, they added that little weird picture of our pouch.
Oh, you yeah. know, they,
I think there's like that. Some little AI, yeah, picture of like a pouch randomly like perched on a thing. Like, and we're like, that's not our photo. That's AI. Yeah.
And that leads me into my watch out, which is Amazon is not a set it and forget it type of platform.
Right.
It moves so fast. So much happens. Not only can other people or sellers come in and maybe dilute your brand, but Amazon itself could do it, right? Like, not that they're doing it on purpose, but even something like an AI where they're testing something, you want to make sure that you're paying attention to your detail pages, that you're paying attention to your reviews, you're paying attention to how you show up on Amazon, because it's such a big platform and it moves so quickly that you just want to make sure that you're on top of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was amazing. That was basically
that was so
like every question I had. I'm sure that there are more, but I can't really think of any. That was incredible. And I'm so excited. I really feel like this is going to be so much fun to learn about. It's totally new for me and the team. Shout out to my team for figuring stuff out and for knowing how to ask questions. And we're so happy we found you. You're like the Amazon Sherpa.
I'm so happy to be here. I would never call myself an Amazon expert because I feel like Amazon changes so frequently that it's like, Amazon, Jeff Bezos is not an expert. Like, it's impossible, but it's such a fun thing to work on. And it's a great platform for brands and consumers. So
you do seem to really enjoy it. Yeah. I always go back to my like IP attorney, Amanda, who, when I got off of the podcast with her, I mean, we were talking about like trademarking and copywriting and, you know, I don't know, all the words and, you know, IP and God knows, but she was so into it that I was like, maybe I should have been an IP lawyer.
Right.
Like when I talk to people like you that are super excited about what you do, I'm always like, huh? Like my Walmart, the broker I had from Walmart on the show, I was like, maybe I should move to Bentonville.
Should
and
I get in
be
Walmart?
A Walmart broker. I don't know. Like I want to work at Costco. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I have a lot of things now that I'm excited about. Well, Vanessa, thank you so much for coming on the show. And I'm sure I will be getting a lot of DMs about how to reach you. So folks, I'll share her info with you. When you DM me, we're not going to spam it right now. But thank you.
Amazing. Thank you so much. I had a great time. Thank you for giving me the platform to nerd out about Amazon.
No, awesome. Nerd out anytime. And Liam, welcome back from your vacation and your tour of every baseball field in America. I think that is a very cool, ambitious goal that Liam has that I don't know that everyone knew about or that he wants everyone to know about, but it's very cool. Sorry if that's private. And listeners, I am going to visit my daughter, who I was just talking about in the pool. She's away for the semester, so I'm going to visit her next week, but I'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of In the Sauce.
In the Sauce is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.